Most of what you're going to find probably involves a prop.
Yeah.
lots of problems. It depresses me sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Christina thought of this idea to talk about props. And when she said this, I was like, oh my gosh! Because just this week, I was looking at YouTube clips. I'm looking to be inspired, like find some new combos, check out new awesome stuff, try some new steps and stuff. And all I could find was, you know, someone doing some wings or someone doing intricate veil work or someone doing, I don't know, candle things. Like, and then I'm just like, oh, I have to go to the next as soon as I see a prop, which I was like wondering, is that wrong? Is that bad of me?
Yeah. I guess everyone's going to feel differently, right, about props. But I do know what you mean. If you've got your heart set on a really great belly dance show, sometimes, not always, but often, the prop can kind of take away from the belly dance.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like I say, not always.
No.
Some people do
like props.
Really,
I like some props.
Really
not
good
that
job.
I do props sometimes.
Yeah.
I think it depends what you're looking for, right? Like, actually, we were talking to Will earlier.
Oh, yes.
We thought he should be with us talking about this, but...
He has some very interesting opinions.
Yeah, we were thinking of making a video of him showing what he thinks we should do with veils. Yeah, it was very interesting what he was demonstrating.
Yeah, he does have some very interesting prop ideas, because if you're the cane choreography,
yeah, that's right.
You and I were working
in
on
the blog, he was helping us.
Yes,
with all of it, telling us what we should not be doing, telling us what we should be doing,
and demonstrating.
Yeah,
yeah, not just telling.
No, actually demonstrating.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really would be helping out here a bit. But
I think just about everybody has a strong opinion about props.
But what he was saying was, like, it when you see someone with a big set of wings or something like that, it's more like Las Vegas, Showtime type thing, rather than just, you know, the art of just belly dance, right?
Okay.
Which I can totally see. Like, I enjoy that type of thing for entertainment. Like, oh, but if I go to see a belly dancer or I'm on YouTube looking for belly dance, then I get kind of like put off when I'm like, oh, it's a prop.
I think because sometimes the prop tends to overshadow in the use of the prop and the technique involved in using the prop can upstage the dancing and the art of the dance, the technique involved in the dance, and that's kind of too bad.
Yeah.
That striving for that balance that is not always easy to do.
Yeah, like we were saying, we like a little bit of veil work, a little bit of cane work, some finger symbols, whatever. I guess, like, I'm more into, like, the more traditional things that you would do, like, not so much the offshoots now.
Mm.
I guess I'm just, you know, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Everyone's always, like, telling me that, but I never really believe it. But then when I think of things like this, I'm like, maybe it's true. Maybe I just like things that old Egyptian dancers used to use, like, and not so much us.
But even then, like, I mean, props could extend to, like, stage props.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Like
Niagara Falls.
I love those.
Coming down
men.
From the, yeah.
Men
would be props.
I think I'm down with that. That's good. I'm down with anything Nagua did, really. I mean, I'm up for it.
Okay, so see, there you
now
go.
Now carry me in on a chariot.
So, yeah, so it's not really that you have a problem with props overshadowing dancing.
But then, you know, you dance really often after you get off that chariot.
That's true, yeah. After you get down from your prop.
Once you come out of your seashell or whatever.
Yeah.
That's right. And then you're an amazing dancer.
Yeah.
You see some great technique.
Yeah.
I think that's the main thing. I think it's that if the prop goes away and you can do some real dancing afterwards, or even if, I guess if you can find that balance you were talking about and actually have some technique while you're
integrated it all.
Hard, I guess. But
yeah.
That's why I don't use it.
Yeah, you don't tend to see it.
I'm not that good.
That is fine. Oh, and another interesting tidbit from Will, the Zills.
Right,
yeah.
What was he saying?
Basically, don't do them unless you can do them.
Yeah, that's why I don't do them. That's exactly why I don't do them.
Yeah, because Zills done well are great. And Zills done poorly are
why are
horrible.
You doing this? Yeah. And also, if you're dancing with a live band, they're even worse. Oh. Like, I've heard band people tell me, like, do not screw us up with crazy bills if you can't play them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what he was saying, he saw people counting when they were playing.
Yes, moving, the dancer was moving her lips, counting, to try and help her
what
play the bill. Yeah, that's
that would be
unfortunate.
Yeah. That's bad.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're great at bills, then wow.
Yes.
I am, like, in love with that.
Yes.
That's great.
And that's one that the people who do it well often do a really great job of integrating it into
because they're dance. I don't know how they do that. I'm awful at that. I just can't dance. I can play bills, I can dance, I can't do it together. It's really, I'm amazing when I'm just standing there.
That's very true.
What about all this crazy veil work? Are you into, you kind of like some of that, right?
You know, I admire and respect the skill and the technique.
Yeah.
But it can, I do believe there's such a thing as too much.
Yeah.
Again, when you are wanting to see a belly dancer,
yeah,
a belly dance
the
show.
Yeah.
Like at a certain point, you're either you're good enough that you can dance with your veil and integrate it together, or you just need to, you know, do some of your tricks and put it down.
Yeah.
And
I think that's good.
Focus
right?
on the dance.
Well, and also I guess it depends on audiences too, right? Because Western audiences, I think they're, like, amazed by all those.
By the props.
Yeah.
Mesmerized by
I think maybe that's why people do a lot of them, because it's so, like, I know Isis Wings, like, people, like, whenever they're around, like, I've had some Isis Wings stuff performed at my showcases by other troops, and people are in love with you. They're just like, oh, my God, you do. I'm like, no, I don't do that. Sorry. They're like, that was the best piece. I'm like, that wasn't mine. But, you know, like, people are amazed by them. I mean, they are amazing, but just, yeah, what we said, like, it's the belly dance side of it. Like,
You know, I think it kind of back to a topic that we've covered before. I don't remember which episode, but, you know, it's this showmanship of belly dance and the art or the, you know, and preserving that integrity, right? And being able to present the art form in an entertaining, appealing way without it being all about
just
showmanship.
The
exercise.
Exactly. And I love showbiz. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but yeah, having that balance between, you don't also want to just stand there and just only do, well, sometimes I do actually.
Well, like when the props start to feel like a gimmick,
that's gimmicky. Good. That's right. Sometimes they are very gimmicky.
No amount of props or skill props is going to make up for poor quality dance.
Bad dancing,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I see this a lot with, like, students of belly dance who are taking also, like, workshops all over, classes, doing, like, double veil and craziness and sand veil and candle something, and they can barely do the basics of belly dance. And I'm like, maybe you need to start, because I think that's something you should maybe start thinking about once you're, like, very solid and, like, you've got the belly dance down. You're looking for more interesting, like, things to add to your repertoire, right? But if you're still struggling with undulates and shimmies, I don't know that it's a great idea to start adding crazy doubles, because I think that's when it becomes gimmicky. You start going and doing shows not knowing how to undulate, but you can do whatever, crazy veil work or something.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, so we'd love to hear your opinions on props and what you think of them. And I know a lot of belly dancers love props and intricate props and all that. And I love them too, but just, you know, finding that balance I think is important. And so let us know what you guys think.
Please.
Yeah. We'll be back after this break. See you then.
Bye.
Bye. This episode, I'm excited. We have some shout-outs. Shout-outs to some of our listeners. Shout out to Gail, her dance name's Kismet. Whoop whoop to the kiddie! And she also wanted to dedicate a song about great hair to Ilona. So I don't know, I'll see if I can get Will to do something about that, improvise a little song. Not sure how we'll do there, but maybe just a shout out to Ilona will be good. Shout out to Ilona!
Shout out to Pat Bevan, my mommy, who just started taking my beginner belly dance course. Yay. Shira.net. Andy Dances. And she wants a shout out to Janie because she won't be expecting it. So shout out, Janie. And Natalie Castro at nc-designs.ca. She's a belly dancer and she does design work. And to Zumba by Amelia Moon DeKemp.
The last shout out goes to Mackie. I know you thought you missed the deadline there, but you got in just in the nick of time. So shout out to Mackie. And if you want your own shout out on the next episode of Belly Dance Talk Radio, it's very easy. You just go to Facebook, find the Belly Dance Talk Radio page, and if you haven't yet liked it, like it, and then you'll be notified whenever I put a message up asking for shout outs for the next episode. So all you have to do is just leave your name under that message, and we'll shout you out next episode. Hopefully we'll have lots more next time. Much love to all our listeners, even the ones we haven't shouted out here. We love you guys. Now we're back with the lovely Teresa from Toronto. So you're a local Toronto belly dancer, and I'm always so impressed with all your shows. So
thank you.
So welcome to Belly Dance Talk Radio.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yeah. So let's get started right from the start. How did you get started in belly dance?
I was 16, I think. And I really just wanted a hobby, and I looked on the internet to try to find dance classes, and what ended up working really well for my schedule was belly dance. So I started at Arabesque, so I went there, tried out a class, had no idea what I was getting into at all, but I loved it, and went back, never looked back.
That's awesome. That's kind of my story, too.
Yeah.
So how long have you been belly dancing? A while, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Shoot. 10 years almost.
Wow.
Oh, wow. That's a long time. Yeah.
That's awesome. So, is there anything you now know about belly dancing that you wish you had known at the beginning?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
In terms of, I was one of those people that went to every dance class that I could. So
yeah.
I do like 6-7 classes a week or however many I could. But I did a lot. But because I did a lot at the beginning, I thought I was this pro belly dancer way before I was actually this pro belly dancer.
Yeah.
So I think what I would have changed, maybe not changed, but you know, looking back at it, I kind of felt like I rushed a little bit my student to professional status.
Yeah.
But it all worked out, I guess.
Yeah.
But you know, looking back at it, I was running when I maybe should have walked a little.
I think a lot of us do.
I think so. It's part of belly dance culture a little bit.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that.
Yeah, sure.
So you do lots of different dance styles, and you're awesome at them all. I've seen some YouTube clips.
Yeah.
So you do all sorts of stuff. So how does that help you at all with your belly dance, or what does that do for belly dance for you?
Yeah, definitely. I was definitely not one of those kids that danced at all. So belly dance was, except for like an 8-week hip-hop dance session when I was a teenager, belly dance was kind of my first real foray into like institutionalized dance classes.
Right.
So there were a lot of sort of dance, basic dance training that I did not have. So I remember turning was a huge disaster. And walking. Skipping gracefully. So at some point I started taking jazz and ballet, which I think was a huge help for me, just because I didn't have that background. And I think what those dance forms also did in terms of training as a dancer is remind you that dancing in itself is very athletic, because I think sometimes we go into belly dance classes thinking we just want this kind of fantasy, right? This sort of Arabian Nights fantasy, and there's no understanding of the work and athleticism that belly dance actually takes. So I think those dance forms reminded me of the importance of those aspects of dance, that it is really a lot of work. It's not, you know, I don't know, it's not sort of just
flailing
hanging out, flailing around. Yeah, it's not that look.
lot good when it's that look.
No, so it brought into my life the importance of that kind of training in terms of dance, where you're not necessarily always doing the most fun things. You're not necessarily always learning a choreography. You might be drilling things for hours on end. You might be traveling across a room for a long time or turning, and it's not the most interesting thing, but it really helps your dance and it helps you as a performer. So, I mean, that's helped me as a performer and as an instructor as well, because I really try to, regardless of why people are in my classes, I think I try to train them
for
as dancers.
Yeah.
Instead of as, you know,
yeah,
let's create an Oriental fantasy.
Right.
Which is not.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Well, and speaking of teaching, let's discuss your teaching.
Talk about teaching.
So you teach here. And
I do.
What do you find that your own belly dance practice benefits from your teaching?
Yeah, absolutely. Don't they say that when you teach, you learn the best?
Yeah.
I totally believe that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think my dancing improved exponentially when I started teaching. Just in terms of you having to sort of navigate how to understand a movement and then teach that to other people.
Yeah.
And hope that they understand it. And just those creative aspects to choreography and improv and all of those other things.
Yeah.
I think we're definitely benefited by that.
Yeah, definitely. I find the same thing. So you're very busy with dance and everything, and it's like a full-time job, basically, but you have a whole other full-time thing going on. You're in school?
I am, yes.
So what are you in school for?
I just started my PhD in women's studies.
Sounds impressive.
Sometimes.
Yeah. So tell us a bit about that and how it relates to belly dance, too, because it sounds like it could have some overlap.
Yes, it can. I think one of my interests in doing this kind of work, which I'm not particularly doing right now, but is looking at the way that belly dance has been taken up by dancers predominantly in the West, so looking at North America in particular, and the types of images and representations of Arab and Middle Eastern women that are present. So that was kind of I guess belly dance was basically my first foray into academic work, which is really interesting. So in that way, they certainly link up, and there is lots to talk about gender and belly dance and, you know, amongst other things, and race and how those play out in our performances and in our teaching. So there's definitely been that kind of link. But I'm also doing other work in school as well. But belly dance is never far from my mind in terms of the work I do.
I'm always impressed with your improvisation skills. So basically almost every dance you do, I think, is pretty much improvised,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and
I always think they look totally choreographed and amazing, and I'm like, wow, how could that be improvised? So you have this amazing ability to improvise and look polished, I find. It's so true. When I improvise, I flail around like crazy. I look at you, I'm just like, oh, it's so polished. So
no, but I think...
why do you think this is? Why do you think you're great at improv?
Because I don't like doing choreographies for myself, completely honest answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think when I started, I started performing, maybe it was bad time management, I'm not sure.
Same here.
But, yeah, and at the end of the day, I would have a show, and, you know, like little student shows sometimes, half list, those kinds of things, and I was never prepared, ever. So I got into what I think is a bad habit. We've talked about this in our bad habit. Yeah.
We're together on this bad habit.
Yeah.
But I think it works for you, though.
Maybe. I'm not sure. It doesn't feel that way
really
sometimes.
Nice.
But, yeah, so unfortunately, my bad habit stuck with me. So I think years of improvising and never choreographing sometimes.
That just
helps. Yeah, it just helps. But now I need,
stuck on
I need
that choreography
to
thing,
know.
Yeah.
No, I was never in the choreography training.
Because I think a lot of people find that a really big problem, right? Like, they're like, I can't improvise. I can do a perfect choreography.
Yeah.
Then when I go to a band or something and I have to improvise, what am I going to do? We're kind of opposite in that way.
Totally.
Where it's like when you get on a stage, where you should have a choreographed
Yeah.
But yours always looks so totally choreographed. So I'm like, wow, what a great improvisation. So do you have tips for people maybe? They're struggling with improv?
Sure. What do I do? Isn't it just improving a lot, I feel?
Yeah, doing a lot.
Around.
Dancing around.
Do anything.
Yeah.
Your favorite song doesn't have to be belly dance. Ever. Right. You can just do whatever you
anything.
Want. Yeah.
That's a good thing.
But I think, yeah, it's just practicing. I mean, I ended up in situations where I had shows and I just
had to.
Yeah, I just had to. And like, I'm not going to choreograph a 20-minute show. I should, maybe. You know, let's do
that. That sounds really snarky. I'm not going to choreograph
But, you know, I mean, things happen in shows, too, right, depending on the type of shows you're getting. But, I mean, if you're at a wedding or a party or a restaurant, things happen. They're unplanned. It's a magical time that choreographies might not be the best or most useful thing. But, I mean, you know, we've talked about this. When you're on a stage and it's lovely and you have 4 to 5 minutes, you should probably choreograph.
That's a good discussion, actually.
It is.
We should have that
sometime
on
here.
Okay, well, so now back to the fusion.
Yeah.
One big thing I wanted to talk to you about was fusion, because you're like, I know you've done a lot of fusion, and you still do some fusion, not as much, I think, and you know so many different styles. I know you've combined Bollywood and belly dance a lot. Mm-hmm. And people kind of know you for that.
Yep.
Do you find that tends to define you to people as a belly dancer?
Yeah, yes. Fusion follows me in my life. That's the definition of what I do. The thing is, when I first started performing more, sort of more publicly, I guess, as opposed to sort of just student things, so more around the larger belly dance community, I was playing with tribal fusion in general, and I suppose because that's what people first see when, you know, you come out or what have you. It's what I got labeled as. So I think, not tribal fusion necessarily, but I definitely got labeled fusion away.
Fusion.
So I remember afterwards when I had these moments where I was like, okay, time, you know, I want to kind of go back and play with more Egyptian style or Oriental style belly dance. It was really strange for people, and maybe it made them uncomfortable. I'm not sure. But, that was tricky. And I mean, I still have people that are kind of like, oh, you're the fusion girl.
I've been the same way for a long time. And Yeah, I think of you as the fusion girl, but not anymore. Now I know you do, I don't know if you do you do any fusion anymore?
I still do Bollywood.
Some,
I still do a lot of Bollywood.
Yeah.
I like fusion, but it just hasn't happened as of late, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about fusion. So everyone's into fusion.
Everyone is into
fusion. So what are your feelings on fusion, the different types of fusion, and, like, where do you stand on that?
I am ambivalent about fusion. I like it and I don't like it.
Right.
I'm a very complicated relationship. I think I've seen amazing fusions of different dance styles, but the thing that always comes up, and I think this comes up in discussions generally when people talk about fusion, is what defines something as, you know, quote-unquote good fusion or quote-unquote bad fusion, and I think the difference that comes up a lot is knowledge of dance styles. And if a dancer doesn't have that, I think it shows, but two, I think it's really problematic in terms of the appropriation that's happening. If you don't know your two or three or more styles that you're fusing and you're just kind of throwing things together because you feel like you can, I'm highly suspect of that. And I think there needs to be a real definite understanding of styles, not just kind of this very shallow, like, okay, I kind of know two moves, so let me throw them together. Like, I've taken a couple, you know, contemporary dance classes, but I probably should not be doing. Well, I've taken more than a couple contemporary, but I'm not a contemporary dancer in any way, shape, or form. So probably fusing that with belly dance is not a good idea. And then there's things like music choices, and these things are also complex, right? Like, are you really going to find the perfect song that blends both styles? Probably not. But I don't know. I think those choices are really complex, and I just think that whenever we're doing fusion, we need to be really careful about the kind of appropriation that's happening, and also know your audience, and, you know, I know that, and this is for anything, I mean, really, it's not really just about fusion, but understanding that you're presenting an image of these styles to your audience, and you need to be very careful about that kind of image. Because that's what you're leaving them with, and then that's all that they think that those styles are. And I've seen fusion performances that make me very uncomfortable because they leave the audience having this very problematic assumption about those dance styles that are being presented on the stage.
Yeah, if that
makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Fusion just seems to be getting more and more popular, definitely. So where do you think this is all leading to?
Probably more fusion.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like, at least in the belly dance world, I can't really speak for other dance industries, I guess, but it seems to me that you do have to have your fusion niche to
be somebody.
And that's how you're going to get known. You can't. It's very rare, it seems, for people now to just be a belly dancer. You have to be a belly dancer that can do this. You have to be the Bollywood belly dancer.
Yeah.
Or you have to be the, you know, whatever belly dancer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I mean, just economically, too, it's also much more marketable to be a fusion dancer, which, you know, like, I mean, my gigs now, I get a lot of, like, can you do Bollywood belly dance, or can you just do Bollywood? So, I mean, economically, it's more marketable, like, be quite honest with you, a belly dancer is not as exciting as it used to be,
but
if you are a belly dancer that can, you know, do tricks,
that's
how it is. So, I mean, in terms of marketability, I definitely see why people do it, and sort of to make a name for yourself, I can see why we all do it.
Yeah.
And we all love fusion, of course, too, so that's why. But I think that it's sort of going in these directions where you have to have this kind of niche. And I think generally, I don't know, globalization and all of these processes have just led to, we can basically consume anything we want. We can consume any dance style we want. And I think that's what's happening in the dance world in general, where, you know, we can consume salsa for a moment, we can consume belly dance for a moment, and then in another moment we can consume them both together.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can consume Bollywood and we can consume belly dance and we can consume it together. And, you know, I don't speak of this as if I'm some outsider looking in. I mean, I'm certainly a part of that in terms of, you know, belly dance, and I do a lot of Bollywood as well. But I think these processes are leading to just this integration that, you know, I think some people can argue it's a great thing, and I think, yeah, it is. That's certainly one aspect of it. But I think it's also important that we, you know, just take a step back and, as I said before, just try to look at what it is we're doing with our fusions and where it's going, and also asking ourselves this very personal question, which is, why are we actually doing this, right? Like, what is your intention? What is your motivation? What is your relationship to the things that you're presenting on stage, whether it's just belly dance or whether it's fusion as well? I think that those are questions that as performers, even as students of dance and as instructors especially, we really have to ask ourselves all the time and really critically reflect on why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on that note, like, what do you think about belly dance conventions and competitions and stuff where I feel sometimes that people are just trying to outdo one another, like, not in a mean way, but just in, like, a crazy way. Like, I'm going to do belly dance to, you know, I don't know, Metallica. Well, I'm going to do belly dance wearing a big purple
robot.
Exactly. Like, so what do you think about that? Do you think that's part of the, like, do you think it's just going to keep going crazier and crazier? Like, I'm not sure, is there going to be a crash and everyone will go back and be like, oh, I want to just do some pure...
Maybe. Do you think so?
No, not really, but...
it seems like
that's
maybe
true
that
what
would
I think.
Be the trajectory, like, to go up
that
and then...
Yeah, like, whoa, it's
and then
too
it
crazy.
Over again?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Although, I've heard a lot of fusion dancers tell me that, like, tribal fusion and all this new fusion-y type stuff, or even now it's like other fusion, right? What's it called? There's other names
there's
now. I'm not even,
names.
I don't know. I'm in the old school. I'm like tribal fusion. That's all I remember. But fusion, let's say fusion, whatever they want to call it. They say that's the, a lot of them say that that is the future of belly dance, and to stop, hold, like, what the heck, it's changed through the years all these times. What do you think about that? Like, like, as they say, you know, Egyptian belly dance has changed. It used to be in one spot, blah, blah, blah. Then ballet came into it, this and that, and they're saying, well, now this is coming into it, and I don't know, what do you think about that?
You know, logically, it's a fair argument, I guess. No, I mean, it is, because you do see the way that belly dance itself has transitioned, and belly dance itself, I would argue in many ways, is a very westernized dance form. But I feel like the direction now is moving so far beyond something that you could title belly dance or oriental dance.
Right, and people don't even want to.
Or whatever your, vocabulary is. It's become so far removed from that, and yet this name belly dance still remains, and I think, and the associations of belly dance still remain, and I think that that's where it gets really problematic. So, you know, people that want to do fusion, I feel sometimes like we're doing fusion, and what your fusion is actually doing is some form of, like, hip-hop and contemporary dance, which is beautiful and it's lovely, but I would probably urge those people to rethink why they're calling it belly dance, or belly dance in this way that we understand it, as a dance form that derives from the Middle East and dances from, you know, folklore and et cetera in that region. So
okay, but then I have a question about this.
Yes,
interjecting here.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I've been at panels where people say, oh, well, I don't call it belly dance. And I'm like, but you're at a belly dance conference. Like, so they're kind of saying, well, I'm not calling it belly dance, so you can't blame me. I'm not calling it belly dance. I'm calling it fusion. I'm calling it interpretive. Or I'm calling it this. Yeah. I'm calling it that. But they're still at all the belly dance things. They're in the belly dance world. They're marketing themselves to belly dancers.
Yeah.
So I feel like you're saying it's not belly dance, but you are kind of, I don't know. What do you think about that? The whole name thing, like, I mean,
there's something very powerful in naming, and, you know, I think someone could probably use the argument against me that belly dance in itself as a term does not necessarily link itself to the Middle East, but
right.
I think our sort of normative understandings of the term is that it is. So, to me, there's also this way that I think that's happening a lot in North America where we think that we are entitled to do what we want to do with this, and I find that to be really problematic. To sort of say that, okay, well, I've taken belly dance, but now I'm going to make belly dance mine. So therefore, it's mine, and it's okay that I can do that, and I can
anything
change it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it tries to take away that historical connection to where these dances come from, but retain the name. And, but it's also this kind of, I think, very narcissistic, ego-driven way of being where you actually think that you can just take and do what you want with things that I think is very problematic. So I guess I'm not a fan of that. I guess is what we've come to
North
conclusion.
American.
Well, yeah, I mean,
thing.
Yeah,
in
I just
general,
don't
a lot of things.
Yeah, I just don't think that that's
that's not nice.
Appropriate.
Not nice.
No, it's not nice. Do that. And I think people should really rethink the dance styles that they're doing. I mean, what people are doing is very beautiful, it's very lovely, and it's very innovative, but the connection that we still have with belly dance is maybe, in those fusion spaces, perhaps something that needs to be rethought, especially in terms of naming, in terms of movement, vocabulary, etc., because what's happening, I think, is something very dissimilar to belly dance in many ways.
Yeah, so there's so many things we could talk about here about fusion. I feel like this is, like, to be continued, for sure.
Yeah, it's certainly an ongoing discussion.
Yes, for sure, in our community.
Yeah,
as well
definitely.
With us. Do you have any final thoughts on fusion you want to share with the listeners?
I just, you know, think through your fusions.
Yeah,
very
that's
important.
A great piece of
yeah,
that.
I think, you know, just reflect on, you know, say, you have a wonderful idea about performing a couple different dance styles, you know, just think through how you're going to do it, think through your audience, think through why you're doing it, think through how you name it. All of these processes, I think, are really important, and, you know, we sort of negate, you know, the importance of, say, costuming, and what that tells your audience, how we name what we call our dance styles, how we present our movements, how we present our music, and all of these aspects of performance, I think, really deserve critical self-reflection on the part of dancers that do fusion, including myself. So I guess those are my final words.
Yeah, that's inspirational. I like it.
I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, I'm going to really think through my fusion.
I should think
through. Think through your fusion. You totally should have. I'm going to have a t-shirt made for you.
Okay.
So why don't you tell us all your info, your YouTube name, and your website and stuff like that, so people can check you out if they haven't seen your amazing work.
Sure. My website is teressabellydance.ca. TERESSABellydance.ca. And on YouTube, you can find me as well under Teressa Belly Dance.
Awesome. So check her out. And thank you so much for being here with me on Belly Dance Talk Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. That was fun.
Yeah. We'll be right back after these messages. Mayada's new Become a Fierce Belly Dancer 12-week course. Are you ready to take your dance to the next level and delve deeper than you ever have before in belly dance, Arabic music, and Middle Eastern culture? If yes, this is the course for you. Mayada and her crew are ready to push you further than you ever thought possible. Refine your technique, polish your stage presence, take the fear out of improv, demystify choreography, and pump you full of Arabic culture, language, and music. Check out www.mayada.ca. Welcome back to Belly Dance Talk Radio. I am now joined with my awesome co-host, Will.
Hello there.
So we've been asking everyone, what do you want to hear us talk about on the radio show? Because we're always like, what should we talk about? What should we talk about?
Yeah.
What do we both, you know,
have in common?
Yeah. so we've gotten a lot of requests for music stuff, like our top picks for Arabic music for belly dancers and stuff like that. So we have decided it's hard to pick a few songs that belly dancers should know, like 10, or be restrained by that. So we're going to do a series of various things. So we're starting out today with our top classic picks,
right,
like of just two artists, really.
Yeah, we made it easy for you guys. It's only two artists that we have, or you guys did a research.
That have been redone and re-whatever, like crazy. So there's tons of versions of their songs, and all bands play these songs, and, you know, these are songs that, as a belly dancer, if you don't know one of these songs, you must know it. You need to know it. So it's like a good guide for beginners to learn 10 songs they need to know, like that will help them in their dancing. And for more advanced and pro dancers, it's good because if you're missing one, then go research it and listen to it lots and dance to it lots. And if you know them all, then you're awesome, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. And once again, we said that, you know, any of these two singers, if the band asks you to pick a song, right, and you give them one of these songs, it's very easy for them to play because they normally play these songs on a regular basis at clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, it's like, as you said, they're essential songs that must be played, I would say.
Like during the night,
during the night,
probably all going to be played.
Yeah,
yeah,
at any point, one of these songs or all of them will probably be played at any nightclub.
And also, these songs are amazing if you listen to the originals, just to get a feel for Arabic music and learn more about all that and get the feeling in you.
Yeah, and you guys got to remember that the originals are like an hour and a half.
Yeah, they're long
songs, right? So
which is awesome.
What the bands will play, they won't play. Don't worry, they won't play you the hour and a half song.
No,
it's going to be about a 20-minute remix of
five.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry, 5-minute remix of you know, the most famous part of that song, and there's not going to be much singing involved. It's all the it's just musical.
So it's important, I think, to listen to the original.
Yes,
just
sure.
To get the feel and, like, wow, this is the real song, this is the singer, wow. And then I think it's important to listen to all the redos of it by all the bands today, because then you know what you're going to be hearing out there now, or what you might be using for a show, like a 5-minute show, you know, so you don't have an hour-long show. So why don't you talk a bit about the two artists? We're doing a male and a female, and there are, like, favorite, like, go-down-in-history singers, musicians.
Yeah, we chose, for the female, we chose Umm Kulthum. We feel that Umm Kulthum is the is the most important, I would say, female Arabic artist that every person needs to know.
needs
to know about, right? Research her, read up about her. She is the most famous person once again. She changed the Arabic music totally during her time, and her music and songs just keeps, you know, will live on forever. I feel like this is like something like it's like the pyramids, you know, where they're always going to stay there forever. Like, you can't get rid of them, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like a presume she will never go away, right? Her songs will always be with us. And no matter how, like, even the young generations, they always, will go back. As much as they do listen to these days, the current songs, the past beat and whatnot, but then... At one point, they will always like to sit back and relax and enjoy one of the classical music done by Umm Kulthum, for example.
Right, yes. And I remember my first teacher, Yasmina, she told me, you just need to listen to these original tapes. They were tapes back in the day, like hour and a half long tapes of one song. And even if you don't like it at the start, you're going to, like, this is going to help your dancing so much. And I really believe that. I tell my students that, too. So
it sure does. I think, you know, the more you listen to this music, the more you develop, like, a feeling.
Like an ear for Arabic music.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's very complex, her music. It's not just, like, four here, four there. Like, there's, especially if you're improvising to bands, to know her music is really important because it's not the type of song you can kind of just fake through.
Right.
So these are really full of all these different funky time signatures and accents and whatever.
Correct.
Yeah. And feelings, crazy feelings coming out of her.
That's right.
Okay, and our male musician?
Our male musician, he is one of my favorite male singers. His name is Abdul Halim Hafiz. He also was around Umm Kulthum time. He was considered, I think, but when he first started singing, everyone hated his music, right? Because it was the upbeat of Arabic music during that time, right? And it wasn't it wasn't accepted by
the, wasn't the norm, yeah.
Yeah, by the listeners, because they're all, you know, used to Umm Kulthum and how, you know, it was like Beethoven, you know. That was her music, and then Abdul Halim came. He was
like a rock star.
He was like a rock star, pretty much, because his music was a bit faster. But then, as you know, he kept going. I think he was booed off stage a couple of times, and tomatoes were thrown at him, right? But he never gave up, and he kept going. And but I think the reason, you know, his success was most of his songs were love stories. And that's when people start catching on, right, to his music. And when they gave it a chance, everyone fell in love with it.
Yeah, and we still are in love with it.
We still are.
It's amazing. Okay, so let's get started. Let's start with
Umm Kulthum. And the first song we chose was Inta Omri, or You Are My Life, by Umm Kulthum. Inta Omri! I can sing, you know. Second song we chose for you tonight is also by Umm Kulthum. It's Ana Fi Intizarak, or in English, I Am Waiting For You. Late at Hope, or Night of Love, is song number 3 that we chose for you guys tonight. Also, a great one of this song is song number 4, Istafakir, or English. Number 5, and the last one from Cuckoo for tonight is Zeta for tonight. And now we move to our male artist. I'm just having Huffis. And for his first song, or song number six, would be Yanatella. Once again, Umm Kulthum and Abd al-Halim, they're a great start for you guys to listen to.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, definitely. So,
and obviously there's a lot more, but these are the main, I would say, not the two main ones, but they are the two main ones.
They are. I will say that.
I would
be that daring and say that. Who do you think would be over these two?
Well,
no one.
Yeah.
Who? No one. There's other greats very close to them, but I think these two are huge, famous people that you need to know. Their music's amazing. It's amazing for dancing, too. It's amazing for listening to. And it's very, you learn about the Arabic music through these songs, for sure.
You sure do.
And so make sure you know all of these. And we'll be back with other lists, like we're going to do like top openings, top folkloric songs, top maybe more current, like kind of the middle, maybe not totally current because we don't love them. But
I don't even know these guys.
No, but we're old folks. So we'll do things like in between, maybe like, you know, not this old, but kind of more towards...
Yeah, like, you know, early 90s.
It's very good. Yeah.
As well.
So, yeah, let us know what you thought of our countdown. And
let us know what else you want us to talk about and stuff, and if you have any ideas for other musical lists we should do. Okay, thanks for being here with me.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me once again. It's been a long time since we've done Belly Dance Talk Radio.
I know. Have you missed it?
I have, to be honest. I did miss it.
Yeah?
Yes.
And the listeners missed you.
And I have missed them, too.
Yeah. We all miss doing this, but we're back on every month now. As long as you guys tell us things to talk about, because that's our main, I think that's our main issue, not getting it out. We're like, what should we say? What should we talk about? We need people to just keep giving us ideas.
Yes, please. Give us ideas, and I'll just keep talking.
Yeah.
All right.
We're good talkers.
And hopefully you guys like what I'm talking about.
Okay.
I like to talk a lot.
Okay, we'll cut you off right there.
Even if it doesn't make sense.
And say goodbye, good night.
Yeah, this has been so much fun. And we'll see you guys next time.
Yep, can't wait.
Can't wait.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Belly Dance Talk Radio. We love to hear from you. If you have any questions, comments, or are interested in advertising on our show, email me at miata@rogers.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, make sure to spread the word. Post the link on Facebook or Twitter, tell all your friends, like our Facebook page, and subscribe to us on iTunes. See you back here on the 15th of each month. And if you want any more info, check out www.mayada.ca. See ya!